Now, all of us know that there are five books of the Torah, Chamisha Chumshei Torah, and yet, surprisingly enough, according to Chazal, there are actually seven books of the Torah, and this is based on a pasuk in Mishlei that starts off about women. Chachmas Nashim Bansa Beisa, it is the wisdom of women who build a bias. Chotzva Amudeha Shiva, she excavates her house on seven pillars. And the Gemara says, now you might have learned 7 days of the week, all sorts of other things. The Gemara says, no, these are the seven chumashim of the Torah. Of course, you can't say seven chumashim, chumash means a fifth, but the seven books of the Torah. So the Gemara asks, there are five books of the Torah? The answer is no. The book of Bamidbar is divided into three books. And the books are not of equal size at all. From the beginning of Bamidbar until the verse Vayihi ben Soah Aaron is book number one. Vayihi ben Soah Aaron, just two psukim, those two verses that we recite when we take out the Torah, is book number two. Two verses, two psukim. And the rest of Bamidbar is book number three. Vayihi ben Soah Aaron has the status of a whole chumash, a whole sefer. This even has halachic implications, although the halachic place is a bit obscure and it really doesn't apply today, but I'll mention it to you. You know, it's interesting that there was a concept in the time of the Beis HaMikdash that touching Kisvei HaKodesh, books of the Torah or the Nach that were written in on Klaf, in Ksav Ashuris, in Torah, Sefer Torah writing, actually made your hands tameh. You had to do Netilah Shadayim after you touched them. This is very strange. If I touch, you know, some secular newspaper that really makes me spiritually tameh, my hands are fine. If I touch Kisvei HaKodesh or Tefillin or Mezuzah, my hands are tameh. What sense does that make? In fact, one of the tzdukim in the Mishnah asked one of the chachamim, if you touch Homer's book, it actually mentions Homer, no problem, if you touch the Sefer Torah, your hands are tameh. So the Gemara explains that this was a takanas chachamim, because in the olden days, they used to store Kisvei HaKodesh together with truma, that you give a kohen, because they figured truma is kadosh, and Kisvei HaKodesh are kadosh, let's put it together with the truma. Problem is, when you put a scroll together with grain, and you have rodent infestation, when the rats or the mice came to eat the grain, they also chewed the scrolls. So Chachamim made a takana that when you touch Kisvei HaKodesh, your hands are tummy, and then you wouldn't be allowed to eat truma, so that way you'd be forced to keep the Kisvei HaKodesh separated from the truma, so you wouldn't get tummy. Now, this is a fascinating issue. This is why, you know, there's a lot of machloksim in the Mishnah, whether certain books of Tanakh are kadosh or not kadosh. For example, Koheles is a machlokes, because Koheles has statements that superficially may deny Techiyas HaMesim. He said Koheles, when the soul, when the body dies, that's it, etc. Shir HaShirim is a machlokes, because taken in a literal sense, it's romantic. Even Esther is a machlokes, because the name of Hashem is not mentioned. It's a machlokas. We obviously have a psak, but it's interesting, the way the Mishnah describes the machlokas is almost counterintuitive. It says, there is a machlokas if Koheles makes your hands tame. Metame yasiyadayim. That's the expression. Is it metame yasiyadayim? That's the expression. Now, you would think, if you were just guessing, oh, if you hold it makes you tame, that means it's not kadosh. And if it doesn't make it, the other way around. If it's metame esayadayim, and that means you have to wash your hands, it's kadosh. Now, the reason I bring this up is, the Mishnah then discusses how many psukim qualify as the halachic definition of a sefer for Kisvei HaKodesh. And it mentions, even if you have a piece of cloth that only has 85 letters from Torah Nevi'im or Ksuvim, just a partial, it is halachically a sefer, because Vayihi ben Soah Aaron, which are two verses, is halachically a sefer even though it only has 85 letters. Now, another peculiarity about a sefer having only two verses is that in a sefer Torah, Vayhi ben Saya Ha'arayn is set apart in the Torah by two nuns, a nun in the beginning and a nun in the ends. And not only do the nuns have no particular meaning that we could automatically figure out, but the nuns are reversed and upside down, right? Turned in a different way and then turned over. Nun hafuch. So let me just share with you Rav Tzadok's point, because that'll be a segue into our topic today. Rav Tzadok says that the reason the book of Bamidbor is divided into three portions is because of the following. The first part of Bamidbor is the ideal camp, the ideal Jewish society that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to have. A camp in which every shevet has its role, has its uniqueness, has its flag, which means its particular personality in Avodas Hashem, surrounding the Mishkan, the focal point of serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You have the different Leviim, and I think we talked about it last week. Gershon, Kohath, and Merari represent Torah, Avodah, Gemilos Chasadim. So the first part of Bamidbor is the ideal of the holiness of Hashem realized within the camp of Am Yisrael. And it's the model of a community that is not based on conformity and sameness, but a community that is based on the diversity of each contribution. Each shevet is different. That's why it's very, very significant that it's not simply Am Yisrael, but it's Am Yisrael with a division into Shvatim. That's a very significant point. We're one nation, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu also wanted there to be individuality within the nation, in which Reuven is not the same as Shimon. And that's a difficulty we still grapple with. How do you create an achdus and a unity and a nation with, at the same time, allowing each tribe and each person to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu with their uniqueness and individuality? But be it as it may, we'll call Bamidbor Part 1 the ideal society. Bamidbor Part 3 is the sordid reality and the failure of that ideal. Because if the three positives are Torah, Avodah, Gemilas, Chasadim, the three negatives are jealousy, kinah, taiva, kavot, and that you see amply demonstrated in the sordid reality. Taiva, we hit right away. That's the misonanim. Those are the people who want the man, not the man. They complain about the man, and they want the slav. Taiva, they have to have a desire, even though the man could be whatever they wanted it to be like, but they needed the physical meat and the like. Jealousy is the story of Korach, who was jealous of the gedula of Moshe and Aaron. And the meraglim is also the story of kavod, because the Zohar actually says that the reason why the meraglim spoke Lashon Hara about Eretz Yisrael is because they didn't want the people to enter Eretz Yisrael, because they thought they would lose their jobs as Nasiim and be replaced. And the kavod of being a Nasi, they'd rather stay in the desert. Kinetayv of kavod. So it's Zel Yumaseh. Part one of Bamidbor is creating Kedusha by Torah, Avodah, Gemilas, Chasadim. Part three of Bamidbor is destroying Kedusha by Kina Taiva Vakavan. Part two, which are those two verses, Vehi bin Saya Aron, is the transition between the ideal and the real. And that transition is when they finally left Har Sinai. Remember, they were in Har Sinai for 11 months. They came, Rosh Chodesh Sivan, and they're leaving at the end of Iyar. And Chazal say, when they left, it was with a great sense of relief. Kitinok Haboreach mibeis hasefer, like a child who is running away from school. And I like to add, the last day before summer vacation, although Chazal may not have had that particular thing in idea, but you see the way, well, you see, I remember it myself, that, you know, get out of school as quickly as can. Now Rashi adds the point, because people were afraid. The more we stay in Har Sinai, the more mitzvahs Hashem is going to give us. He already gave us 613. Let's get out of here. Who knows what other mitzvahs. Of course, that didn't help them, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave mitzvahs even after they left Har Sinai, but at least they thought, once we leave Har Sinai, no more mitzvahs. So, the key to understanding, how do you go from the ideal to the sordid reality, was the attitude that one had towards the Torah. if you regard serving Hashem as a privilege, as a joy, as a simcha, then that will sustain you. Even if you're not always going to be perfect in what you do, but your attitude will give you that kirvas Elokim. But if you look at it as a burden, as something you want to get away from, then you slide down. And Rav Tzadok then says that this is why Nun's bracket, Vahibin Sayah Arad, because we find that Nun is often exemplified as the sign of Nefila. That's the first letter, Nefila, falling in levels. Right, Chazal say, why is there no Nun in Ashrei? Right, David HaMelech begins every pasuk with a pasuk of a letter of the Aleph Beis, except for the letter Nun. He goes from Mem, Malchuscha Malchus, to Seimech, he skips Nun. So the Gemara says in Brachos, Rav Yochanan says, there is no Nun in Ashrei because David HaMelech didn't want to begin with a word that connotes falling, failure. Now, in the next verse, which is Hashem picking you up, he then says, Somech Hashem, L'chol HaNoflim, Hashem picks up those who fall, but he didn't want to begin with Nefila. The Torah puts in the Nuns to be Merames, that this is a Nefila. Which means, this is an important point actually, what is being suggested here is that the greatest Nefila that occurs to a person spiritually is not so much the Averis that they do, but the attitude that they have towards the Torah. Meaning, sometimes a person might be weak, a person might be nichshal, but they genuinely want to serve Hashem properly. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will, you know, forgive them and will allow them to have a relationship with Him. The other way around, is Chas V'Shalom can have the other way around. A person might keep all the mitzvahs. You might keep everything, but you consider it a burden, a schlep. Well, that's very destructive. In fact, Rabbeinu Yaina has a famous pshat. Rabbeinu Yaina says on the pasuk in Mishlei, Ish lefi mahalalo. Ish lefi mahalalo. A man or a person according to his praises. Rabbeinu Yaina says, the essence of a person can be defined not necessarily by what they do, but by what they praise, what they consider to be important in life. And Rabbeinu Yonah says, you can have a person who may not be such a big tzaddik because he is a weak Yetzer Hara, a strong Yetzer Hara, but he loves mitzvos, he loves Torah, he loves Shabbos. And then you have another person who might keep everything because that's his environment, that's the way he's raised, but he has no enthusiasm for it. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at the Shevach even more. Now, so that's the transition. Now, why is the Nun upside down? So Rav Tzadok says the following. The Torah's Meram is an important message. That every Nefilah can be turned around and reversed. Even when you slide, even when you fail, even when you hit bottom, and there's a real Nun. Nuns are never permanent. They can be turned around. They can be reversed. And therefore, built into the Torah's message of failure is the message of hope, the message that you can change this, you can reverse it. And let me point out, too, that this is a message of Pesach Sheni as well. Beautiful, beautiful message, the Chiddush Yerim says. What's the story of Pesach Sheni? This is 1 year after they left Mitzrayim, right? Obviously, the memory of the Exodus is very powerful. This is before the Meraglim. These are the people who actually left Mitzrayim a year ago. And they bring their first Korban Pesach, actually the only one they brought in the Midbar. The next Korban Pesach they're not going to bring till Yehoshua ben Nun. But they brought one Pesach in the Midbar. One can imagine the joy. I mean, maybe we can't imagine. Really, it's no comparison to our Seders in which we're moved from Yitzhak. This was a nation that physically remembered the Makos and Yitzhak Mitzrayim. And they bring a Korban Pesach. Oh. What happened? Oh, the wire. Okay. Yeah. So they physically remember this. And there are people who come to Moshe Rabbeinu and they say, we were Tamei, and we can't bring the Korban Pesach. Lama Nigara, why should we be deprived? Now, the Kitcher, let me point out, there's a Machlekes in Maseches Sukkah. Why were these people Tamei? Why were they Tamei?
They had
Say again. Say. Well, there's a machlokas, and this is actually an interesting chronological problem. One view says because they buried Nadav and Avihu, or they took Nadav and Avihu out of the Mishkan, and the other view says they were carrying. It was their turn to carry the Atzmus Yosef, the bones of Yosef. Let me point out that the Nadav and Avihu thing actually raises a bit of a chronological problem, because here's the thing. According to Chazal, Nadav and Avihu died on the day of Hakamas HaMishkan. Well, the Torah says they died on the day of Hakamas HaMishkan. According to Chazal, Hakamas HaMishkan occurred Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Now, the problem is this. If you become Tamei Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and a Tamei Mace is Tamei for only 7 days, and you're sprinkled with the ashes of the Parah Aduma on day 3 and day 7, they would be Tahor by the 8th of Nisan. So why would they still be Tamei on the 14th of Nisan? Say again?
Another day that it started on.
So let me say, but all I'm saying is according to Rashi. Now, the Ibn Ezra therefore says, from here we have a proof. I'm sorry? Yes, they actually did. They actually did. Even though that's an interesting question, huh? Well, first of all, they had to, because keep in mind, if they didn't have the Parah Aduma yet, they couldn't bring it Pesach Sheni. Even there would be Tamei a month later too. Chazal say that they had the Parah Aduma actually all the way back in Mara, the oasis of Mara. That was one of the commandments that was given even before Matan Torah, even though it's not written. So the Ibn Ezra says, therefore, that this is a proof that Chazal's chronology, actually scholik on the mainstream of Chazal, that the Mishkan was established, was dedicated on the 8th of Nisan. I'll explain what it's totally on. And not on the 1st of Nisan. And if it was the 8th of Nisan, then it's still a little difficult because 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. So the 14th day would be their 7th day. They would still be Tamei until night. And since they were Tamei that afternoon, they could not bring the Korban Pesach. Now, let me just explain for those who like chronology what this is totally on. We know that the way the Mishkan was set up in the desert, there were 7 days of preparation that are called Shivas Yemei HaMilu'im, in which the Mishkan was put up and taken down every day. And after the 7 days, on the 8th day, there was the dedication of the Mishkan. Right? Shivat Yemei HaMilu'im, followed by Chanukas HaBayis. Now, the Torah says in Parshas Pikudei that the Mishkan was set up on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. That is in the Torah. That's not Chazal. The Machlokes is the following. When it says in Parshas Pikudei that the Mishkan was set up Rosh Chodesh Nisan, does that mean Rosh Chodesh Nisan was the first of the Shivas Yemei HaMiluim, which would mean the Chanukah Sabayas is the 8th of Nisan? That's the Ibn Ezra's position. Or does it mean that the permanent erection of the Mishkan was Rosh Chodesh Nisan, that would make the Shivas Yemei HaMiluim start Chaf Gimel Adar? So the Machlokes, Rashi and the Ibn Ezra, is how to interpret the Pasuk in Parshas Pikudei that does say Beferish, Rosh Chodesh Nisan is the day the Mishkan was put up. But does that mean it's the first of the 7 Yemei HaMiluim? Or does it mean it's the dedication date and the Shivat Yemei HaMiluim was 7 days before that? Rashi follows the mainstream view of Chazal that the Shivat Yemei HaMiluim began the 23rd of Adar, and Rosh Chodesh Nisan is Hakamas HaMishkan, which means, according to Rashi, Nadav and Avihu died Rosh Chodesh Nisan, which would make it difficult. Why would they be Tamei? The Ibn Ezra learns that the Shivas Yemei HaMiluim began Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and therefore, Shivas Yemei HaMiluim began Rosh Chodesh Nisan, therefore the dedication of the Mishkan is the 8th of Nisan, and that's why they were Tamei. Okay, so that's a chronological point. Now, let me point out that there is a custom many people have, although many people don't have, and that is for the first 12 days of Nisan, after davening, they read the paragraph of each Nasi bringing a Korban. They read the Nisiyim. This is presupposing that the Mishkan was dedicated Rosh Chodesh Nisan, like Rashi, because that's when the Nisiyim began their 12 days. according to the Ibn Ezra, the Nisim brought their karbanos from the 8th to the 20th, not from the 1st to the 12th, right? So obviously even the common minhag is to follow Rashi's. Okay, but be it as it may, these people were tameh, and they come to Moshe and say, why do we not have a chance? And Moshe asks Hashem, and Hashem says, okay, let's create something new called Pesach Sheni that says if a person is tameh or a person is derech rechoka, far away, that's not from the Midbar so much, but far away from Yerushalayim, they can bring the Korban Pesach exactly 1 month later on the 14th of Iyar, and they would eat the Korban Pesach that night. Now, let me point out, Pesach Sheni doesn't mean you have to have Pesach again. You're allowed to eat bread on Pesach Sheni. You're allowed to have even Bisman HaMikdash, even if you needed to bring the Korban, but it gave you a chance to bring your Korban a second time. Now, first, let me just raise a general question, and that is, Rashi brings a chazal in Parshas Bahar that says Hashem gave Moshe Rabbeinu all 613 commandments on Har Sinai with their general rules and with their details. When Moshe was in Har Sinai for 40 days, he didn't just get the Ten Commandments. That wouldn't have taken 40 days. But he got all of the Taryag mitzvahs. So one interesting question you have to understand is there are four places in the Torah where Moshe did not know the halacha until he asked the Almighty, and Hashem had to give him the halacha. The first was the Mekoshesh, the fellow who gathered wood on Shabbos, or carried wood. No, that's another. Well, that's another. Okay, that's a medrash. Right? But in the Chumash, Moshe didn't know what is the punishment for a mekoshesh, and Rashi explains, even though Hashem had already said those who desecrate Shabbos get the death penalty, Hashem didn't say which death penalty. So Moshe had to ask Hashem. By the way, that's the first mention of jail in the halachic structure. Yosef was put in jail, but here the mekoshesh was put in mishmor to figure out what the punishment is. The second case is the Mekalel, that there was a person who was the son of an Egyptian father, a non-Jewish, and a Jewish mother. He cursed Hashem. What's the punishment of the Megadef and the Mekalel? It's also Skila. The third is Pesach Sheni. And the fourth, in the end of Bamidbar, is the daughters of Tzelafchad. Tzelafchad had no sons. And his brothers were claiming that they should inherit. And they were saying, if there are no sons, the daughters should inherit. Moshe has to ask Hashem. So we have four cases. Now, you are correct. There's actually a medrash that says Tzelafchad happened to be the guy who was gathering wood. That's an interesting connection. But the question becomes, I want to ask a general question. The question becomes, if we say that the 613 mitzvos were given to Moshe at Sinai, wouldn't that mean that he knew the punishment for the Mekoshesh and for the Mekalel and Pesach Sheni and Benos Selefcha, the daughters inherit? How do you reconcile the idea that Moshe was given mitzvos and then Moshe didn't know? So there are really two approaches. One approach in the Medrash is that Moshe, of course, knew, but he forgot, that for various reasons, his anger, he forgot in some cases, or Hashem wanted these mitzvahs to come into being through the virtue of the merit of Benos Selefchad, or the people who are Tameh, that they should have the schus. In other words, this posits a forgetfulness. But the Chazon Ish has another approach, which is a very, very interesting approach, and a very yesodistic approach. The Chazon Ish says the following. You must differentiate between when Moshe was given mitzvos and when the Bnei Yisrael were given the mitzvos from Moshe. It's on one hand, Chazal tell us that Moshe Rabbeinu got all 613 commandments. On the other hand, it's clear from the Torah itself that the Jewish people got commandments in different times and places throughout the entire 40 years. For example, there are mitzvos like Yibum that aren't even said in the Torah until shortly before Moshe Rabbeinu's death.
Meaning, we never said, Chazal never said, B'nai Yisrael got all the mitzvos when Moshe came down from Har Sinai. Moshe got the mitzvos, but Hashem then told Moshe when to reveal the mitzvos at different times. So this is an important yesod. The Jewish people got mitzvos over a period of 40 years. The Jewish people did not get mitzvos at one time. They got mitzvos throughout the Torah. Moshe got the mitzvos, but Hashem told him what he should reveal. And in fact, the Chazon Ish says, this is the simple literal meaning of the often repeated verse, Vayidaber Hashem El Moshe Lemor, which the English translates very unhelpfully, and the Lord spoke to Moshe saying, well, what's saying? Saying is superfluous. Just say, Lord spoke to Moshe. The Chazon Ish says, no, Lemor is the green light to now tell Am Yisrael. Meaning, you knew this, Moshe, but now I'm telling you, reveal it to Am Yisrael. This is one of those ideas that once you hear it, it's so obvious that it's very hard to even think of the alternative. In other words, it's very, very clear from the Chumash that the Jewish people were hearing mitzvos at different times in their historical experience. They did not get the Torah at one time. First of all, it has to be that way. Certainly for narratives, it has to be that way, because half of the Torah or more took place after Matan Torah. I mean, what's going to be? In the Torah, we have the story of Korach. Did the Jewish people know the story of Korach before the story of Korach? Was Korach reading from a script? Moshe Rabbeinu comes down and says, okay, Korach, you stand here, the earth is going to open up, and obviously things happen when they happened. Moshe Rabbeinu may have known all sorts of things, but Bnei Yisrael didn't know it until it came down the pipe. So the Chazon Ish says the following. Moshe Rabbeinu's, when he is confronted, in other words, Moshe Rabbeinu has a dilemma. He is confronted with a situation where he knows the halacha, but he hasn't yet been authorized to teach the halacha. Moshe Rabbeinu has already told the Jewish people, "Mechalaleha mos yumas," but he hasn't yet told them that the punishment is skila. He knows that, but there's been no lemor yet. Same thing with the mekalel, same thing with Pesach Sheni. Same thing with B'nai Salafcha. So the Chazon Ish says this is not a question of ignorance, but rather it's a question of getting the green light to be Megaleh, this mitzvah, to B'nai Yisrael. And as Chazal say, Megalgalin Zechus Al Yedei Zakai, Hashem wants good things to come from the efforts of good people. So Hashem wanted the Temeim to be the ones that are Megaleh Pesach Sheni. He wanted the daughters of Tzlafchad, who loved Eretz Yisrael, to be the ones that are Megala, the law that daughters inherit. And similarly, he wanted punishment of sin to come from the actions of sinners. But the Chazon Ish says the issue is not forgetfulness, and this is not a new halacha. Moshe got the halacha, but was not yet given the green light to reveal it. Okay. But coming back, so this is a very important yesod from the Chazon Ish. So, we now come to the situation of Pesach Sheni, and we have a very fascinating teaching of Pesach Sheni. And the Chiddush Yerim says there are two lessons we learn from Pesach Sheni. And both of these lessons are significant. The first lesson is exactly what Rav Tzadok said about Nefila, that no matter how far you fall, you can turn around. And that is, the Torah says, no matter how tamei a person is, no matter how derech rechoka, how far they feel from the Almighty, Hashem gives you the gift of a second chance. Pesach Sheni is that reminder that the gates are never closed. A person should never consider himself to have reached the point of no return. It's the gift of the second chance, and that's a wonderful thing. Lavdavka, second chance, third chance, fourth chance as well. But there's a second lesson that's even more powerful. The gift of the second chance depends on your wanting it enough to ask Hashem. It's an amazing thing. These people were putter from Korban Pesach. They were tamei. First of all, they were doing a mitzvah. Either they took nut of an aviyu, or they were Isaac by Rono Shel Yosef. They were putter from Pesach. What would have been if HaKadosh Baruch Hu would give us a certificate that we were patur from Pesach? You know, assuming we knew it was authentic, if we knew it was authentic, we wouldn't necessarily, well, some of us at least wouldn't necessarily complain. You know, somebody goes to you and says, hey, you're not cleaning for Pesach, says, I have it on the highest authority that it doesn't have to be done this year. You know, okay. May have a problem with guests, hospitality, you know. Okay, but that's, you know, kidney issue. We have that problem anyway with Ashkenazim and Sephardim. It's not so different necessarily. But the pshat is that when you love Hashem, you look for opportunities to serve Him. You don't necessarily take advantage of every leniency. They loved Hashem, and they wanted to express their gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for Yetzias Mitzrayim. And they begged and they said, can't we have a chance too? And Hashem says, if you want it that bad, I'll give it to you. The Chiddush Yerim said, if they wouldn't have wanted it, they wouldn't have gotten it. Pesach Sheni is an amazing type of mitzvah because it came into being only because of the yearning of those people to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this is an important yesod in Avodas Hashem. Hashem always gives you a second chance, or the second chance is always there. But you have to want it. You know, sometimes people come to Yerushalayim, or whatever, they come to Yiddishkeit in some way, and they say, if only Hashem will show me a sign, then I'll move forward. It doesn't always work that way. Sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, show me what you really want, and then the signs will be open. You know, there's a beautiful quote. And the way I was sorely disappointed, I had to use this quote in another context. And it's a quote that everybody says in the name of Goethe, the very famous German author. Which, you know, Goethe's a big guy, you know, like Shakespeare, you know. Unfortunately, I discovered that scholars do not consider this to be from Goethe because they can't find it in the German, but it's from a much lesser known person, W.H. Murray, who is, I don't even know who he is, who's a Scottish essayist, so it sounds less impressive than Goethe. But the quote that is said in Goethe's name and is actually attributed to W.H. Murray, but it's a marvelous quote. I don't have the exact words here. But it basically says that the nature of life is that when you make the commitment to the good, then God opens up opportunities that you never knew would have existed. But until you make that commitment, nothing happens. Nachshon ben Aminadav, right? The Yamsuf didn't split until somebody is willing to go up to the neck. That's right. That's the condition. Pischuli Pesach kechuda shalmacha. You open up like the eye of a needle, but you got to do something. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu opens up. And that's what Pesach Sheni is. Pesach Sheni is the marvelous chizuk that when you want to serve Hashem, He will open the doors. But He won't always give you that sign until you make that Pesach, until you make that opening. Right? That is the, and that's what Rav Tzadok is saying by Nefilah. Then Nefilah is the great reversibility of things. And in many ways, we'll get into the Haftarah Baloscha, in many, many ways, which we talked a little bit last week, in many ways, this is also the message of Menorah. Right? Everyone knows the famous first Rashi in Baloscha, which talks about the fact that the Nesiim just brought korbanos for 12 days in a row. And everybody, so Aaron, everybody was happy, but Shevet Levi was not invited to bring a korban. And Aaron felt, perhaps Hashem is rejecting me because of my participation in the Chet HaEgel. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu reassures Aaron by saying, I'm giving you a mitzvah that is greater than their mitzvah, because you will be able to light the menorah. So the Ramban asks Akasha, what do we mean the menorah is greater than the Nesiim? I mean, after all, the Nesiim brought korbanos. Korbanos apply when there's a Beis HaMikdash. When there's no Beis HaMikdash, there's no korbanos. But the mitzvah of lighting the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash also applies only when there's a Beis HaMikdash. When there's no Beis HaMikdash, there's no Hadlakas Menorah either. So what makes Menorah greater? So the Ramban actually says, this is a remes to Chanukah. that we will have a permanent, eternal Yom Tov, at least until Mashiach comes, which will celebrate the lighting of the menorah. That's kind of the godless of Aaron's mitzvah. There's actually a remez in the Torah to Hanukkah. That's an amazing thing. Which is why, of course, the Haftarah of Baal Yischa, which deals with the menorah, is also the Haftarah of Hanukkah as well, Shabbos Hanukkah. But the Medrash says a little differently than the Rabban. The Medrash does not want to read a remez to Hanukkah, but the Medrash says that even if the Etzem Hadlakas HaMenorah is not going to be forever, it's totally on the Mikdash, but the symbolism of the menorah is a symbolism that endures forever. And that is, the menorah essentially has two different symbols, but they converge. Symbol number one is the menorah represents the light of Torah and Kedusha that Hashem brings into the worlds. Right? It is the ner, as the Haftarah says in the beautiful verse, that Zechariah at the beginning of the Bayis Sheni, after the 70 years of Golus Bavel, sees a menorah being lit by Hashem, by the Malach, and the message is, Lo b'chayo v'lo b'kayach, you will not achieve success by your strength or your heroism. Ki im beruchi, it is my spirit that will give you strength and courage and ability to rebuild a Beis HaMikdash and rebuild Eretz Yisrael and to survive. So it represents the light of Torah that dispels darkness. Darkness exists on many, many levels. There is the darkness of ignorance, the darkness of war, oppression, sinas chinam, ignorance, distance from Hashem, arrogance or depression, either way. And the light of Kedusha can banish that darkness, right? That is the koach of the menorah. It is an affirmation of hope and optimism and emuna in the koach of Torah and Kedusha to vanquish darkness. That is what menorah represents, the koach of Torah. As a little aside, you will notice that in the Beis HaMikdash or the Mishkan, there are two different symbols that represent Torah. The Aron HaKodesh, in the Kodesh HaKodashim, that has the Luchais, and the Menorah represents the light of Torah. Why do we have two symbols of the Koach of Torah in the Mikdash? So the Svarim tell us that this is Keneged Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebalpeh. The Luchais in the Aron HaKodesh represent, and this is fairly obvious, Torah Shebichsav. They are the Torah Shebichsav. Torah Shebichsav is literally etched in stone. Literally, it's etched in stone. But it's etched in stone in the sense that there is no human input into Torah Shebichsav. The words were dictated by Hashem to Moshe. There is nothing we can add, nothing we contribute to it. That is what it is. Torah Shebal Peh, if you remember, we talked about this before Shavuos, although, of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the foundations of Torah Shebal Peh to Moshe Rabbeinu, but it was left to the Chachamim of every generation to take those teachings and apply them to the new questions, right? As I mentioned a few weeks ago, if we ask, what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell Moshe about microwave ovens on Shabbos? The short answer is he probably told him nothing at all about it. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Moshe Rabbeinu the Yesodos by which poskim grapple. Which means Torah Shebal Peh, and this is an important idea, although it may sound a little heretical, I assure you it's not heretical, but maybe you don't believe me, but anyway, the concept is that Torah Shebal Peh is not simply transmitting things from generation to generation. There is a creative, dynamic input into Torah Shebal Peh in which we take the Cholim of Hashem and we apply it. That is symbolized by the menorah. Because unlike the Luchais, which come totally from God, the menorah requires that Aaron fill the lamps and light. And even the nature of a flame, if you look at a flame has different hues, different colors, rises, falls, its movement, its dynamic, it's ever-changing. Because that is the getter of Torah Shebal Peh, the man-God partnership. Right? So on one level, the menorah is the kayach of Torah, the kayach of the holiness that Hashem puts into the Bria that we contribute to, that banishes the darkness of despair, the darkness of Golus, the darkness of feeling helpless. And remember, once again, go back to Zechariah, the Haftarah, in which this is a Nevuah. Zechariah is the last, next to the last Navi. Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi are the last Naviim. When they die, there's going to be no Nevuah. And the Jews have come back after 70 years. Most of them haven't, by the way. A small group of Jews come back. And what are they confronting? They're confronting a land that is totally desolate. Totally desolate. Eretz Israel, totally desolate. They are surrounded by wild animals. Hostile nations, like the Samaritans, the Shomronim, who want to kill them. And they try to build a small little Beis HaMikdash that was so unimpressive that the older people who had remembered the first Mikdash were crying. And not only was it unimpressive physically, but even spiritually, it didn't have the same holiness. And they felt, logically, what's the use? What's the purpose? And Zechariah has the image of the menorah, that the light of Hashem will give you koach, even if you think you can't do it on your own, which is true. That's one idea. But Chazal then say in the Medrash, that the light of the menorah is not only a remez to the Torah, the light of God, but it's a remez to the neshama of a person. And this is, of course, based on a pasuk in Mishle that says, Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam, that a human soul is the candle that is lit by Hashem. I mean, this is the source, of course, of a Yahrzeit candle, of a Shiva candle, and all of this is Ner Hashem Nishmas. This is why, by the way, as you know, it's considered to be an Ayin Hara to blow out a Yahrzeit candle or a Shiva candle, because it represents the neshama of a person. You don't blow out. In fact, some people are machmir not to blow out any candle, even, you know, whatever it is. You know, that's, it's connected to that. It's not a din, but there is such a hanhaga because it's a remez to the neshama. The Chiddush Yerim adds a little kenetz here. The word nefesh. Nefesh can be an abbreviation. Ner, the nun can stand for ner. Now ner in Chazal doesn't mean a wax candle, but it means a cup that's a receptacle. So ner is the cup. Pei, pisila, wick. Shin, shemen, nefesh. Ner, pisila, shemen. Meaning, what is our job in life? Our job is to make ourselves into a candle that can receive the light of Hashem. We make ourselves ner pisila shemen, and then we can receive the light of Hashem. So, this is an important message too, that the light is not just outside of us. The light of Hashem is within us. A person has to have a sense of the light within our neshama. Right, that Hashem gave us kochos and abilities and kedusha. There's a light within us. It's not just outside of us. Right, in Kabbalah, this is described as or hamakif. There is the light that surrounds us. Right, and there's the or hapnimi. There's the inner light that is within. Right, ner Hashem nishmas adam. But then the Medrash goes on and says some other beautiful ideas. Why is a neshama compared to a flame, to a fire? So it says that just like a fire, even a large fire can be lit from a small fire. And as I can take a small fire and I can light a big pyre, so too it's a lesson in humility that a great person can always learn even from a smaller person. So there's a remez to humility. And there's also a remez to the importance of sharing, because when you light from one fire another candle, the first fire is not diminished. So too, when we share our Torah and our mitzvahs with others, we don't become diminished. So basically, what the Medrash is doing is the Medrash is saying that the ramazim of menorah are manifold. They are ramazim to the light of God that suffuses the Bria. Like even the fact that the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash has seven candles, not eight, is because seven represents the totality of time, because the cycle of the world is 7 days, and then we repeat again. So the holiness of God and the hashgacha pratis of Hashem permeates Bria, right? That's the remez to the or of Torah and hashgacha pratis. And then the ner is also the radiance of my own soul, which is called the ner Hashem nishmas adam, the ner pesila shemen. And then we have the ramazim Chazal give us that a katan could be madlik a gadol, a lesson in humility, and the fact that a lesson in selflessness, that we don't become diminished by the act of sharing. So Menorah is all of these things, right? All of these ideas are nichlal in Menorah. Let me mention some others that are included in Menorah. It's even the construction, it's not just the act of lighting, but the construction itself has a remes. The halacha of Menorah is, it must be miksha. Miksha. Now miksha means, it must be made from one solid piece of gold. You don't hammer together different pieces, but you got to find a block of gold big enough that you can then make a menorah out of that. You know, you melt it away, but you have to have one piece. Now, there are actually three things in the Torah that the Torah says have to be miksha. One is menorah. One is also in this parsha, chatzotzros, the trumpets that were blown to summon people for meetings and to go to war or to travel, to leave, have to be miksha. And the third is the kruvim, the cherubs, on top of the kapores of the Aron HaKodesh, have to be miksha. One piece. So one of the Svarim says, there's an important remes here. Because what is the symbolic meaning of miksha? When something is one piece, that means it is uniform. It is consistent. Right? If I have different pieces of metal, so there might be different hardnesses, different consistencies, different surfaces and the like. Miksha is going to be the same. It's all the same. So miksha is the same inside and out, every side you look at. So there's a message here that there are three areas of life in which you have to be consistent. You can't change from day to day. One is your approach to Torah and mitzvos generally. That's the menorah. The menorah is the Or HaTorah. One can't have the attitude, I feel like doing something today and not the other day. You got to be consistent. You have to be consistent. One should not be a creature of one's moods, although it's human nature that our moods have a great impact on us. But in Derech Avoda, one tries not to be a creature of moods. Mitzvos are mitzvos. One does mitzvos. Somebody went to the Chafetz Chaim and said, Rebbe, I have a problem. I don't have pleasure when I learn. So the Chafetz Chaim said, well, I guess you have to learn without pleasure for a while. Meaning, part of being an Eved Hashem is, we got to do it. Again, it's like a job, right? It is a job. Right? You can't kind of say, I just don't feel like doing this today. You know, unfortunately, you have to. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky once made a semi-bitter joke. it's a bit. There's actually some bitter truth to it. He was talking about the fact that in yeshiva, people are always going off to chasanas when they wouldn't really be able to do that in the job. So he says he now understands the meaning of Pirkei Avos. Ein ben chorin el mish osek b'torah. The only person who is truly free is the one who is learning Torah, because they can take off for anything. Now again, it's a bit of a bitter joke, but there might be some truth to that we have to look at this like a job. So you got to be consistent. That's the first thing. And so menorah is in Torah, be consistent. And also that also means inside the house and outside the house, because sometimes people are, you know, it's our nature. We're nice and friendly and giving, you know, to everybody else. When it comes to our own families, sometimes our nerves are a bit more frayed. And you have to remember, as Rabbi Saul Salanter used to say, the ahavta l'rayecha kamocha, to love your friend as you love yourself, the first friend is your spouse, your husband or your wife. That has to be the ikar kiyum of the ahavta l'rayecha kamocha, more than we do for the outside. Now, the second message is kruvim. Let's go with kruvim. Now, kruvim, as you know, were little angels that resembled children. So there's a remes here that in parenting you have to be consistent. And that both means there needs to be a consistency between what you say and what you do. Children are absolutely geniuses in picking up any discrepancies between what their parents say and what their parents do. And if you think they don't notice, well, anyone that's a parent obviously knows that they notice very well and from a very, very young age any type of discrepancy, whether they mention it or not. It goes in there. Rav Huttner used to say that sometimes you have people who talk in shul And they stopped their conversation to tell their children to keep quiet. Then they resumed the conversation. So he says, the child is learning an important lesson. He is learning how to tell his children to be quiet when he grows up. That is what the child is learning. But the child is not learning how not to talk in shul, because parent is talking. So consistency both means, and Nebuch, you know, they say, the Sfarim like to say, that we have no yetzer hara without our children, meaning to say we want our children to learn, do mitzvah, shtag, do all those things. The yetzer hara is for us. But unfortunately, this is the bad news about being a parent. If you want to be a good parent, you got to also be a good person. Meaning to say, all the things we want from our children, we have to try on our own to achieve as well. Now, sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you a freebie. It is true that people are sometimes zoche to children, and we hope it, we actually hope that, to children who may far outshine them. But that's a gift. You have no right to expect it. As Baruch Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu in his chesed sometimes gives us that. But b'derech hateva, whatever we want our children to be, we have to try to be that person. And that's the consistency between what we say and what we do. But there also has to be a consistency between father and mother. Again, children are absolutely brilliant at exploiting any differences between Abba and Ima, and they do it quite well. Now, men and women are, of course, different. Everybody knows that, and nobody is saying that two parents do exactly the same thing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu B'davka understands, I mean, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a system where men and women relate to their children in different ways, but on fundamental yesodos and values, what is important in Yiddishkeit, what is important in life, there has to be a consensus. When there's that inconsistency, the child is hearing mixed messages. Right? So that's the remez of kruvim have to be mixture, right? So Aron Menorah is a remez to mitzvahs generally. Kruvim is a remez to raising children. And the third one is Chatzetz Reis. Chatzetz Reis are community leadership, right? Because Chatzetz just summons people. And that refers to the same idea that a leader, a Rav, a Rosh Yeshiva, even a political leader of a society, has to treat everybody with a certain even-handedness, not to show favoritism, not to respect some people and not other people, and to have a consistent moral vision of what type of hanhaga is appropriate. And that too. So therefore, the point I'm making is that it's not just the fire that's a remez to a neshama, but even miksha is also a remez to the values that of consistency that one has to have. Let me just end with one final aspect of menorah, and that is the shemen zayas of a menorah. The Torah says must be produced by kasis. Now kasis is the pure drops that come out when you squeeze the olive. Now the Gemara explains that after the first few drops were squeezed, they would then put the olives in a heavy olive press, and there would be dead weight, a beam on them, and after time, after hours, the dead weight or inertia would produce a grade B oil. But dead weight or inertia oil is only kosher for meal offerings, for menachos. It is not kosher for menorah. The menorah cannot be the dead weight oil. It must be the oil that is squeezed from human effort. The Kutzker Rebbe says, there's a beautiful message here. And that is, since the menorah represents Torah light, the light of Torah, what is being taught here is that the true light of Torah comes only when we put in the effort. It is the effort, the work, the toil that we put in, not the dead weight or inertia, that brings a person to Torah. And then he offers the following beautiful explanation. I'm sure you've heard this Gemara. The Gemara says in Maseches Megillah that if a person says, Yogati, I worked hard, v'lo matzati, and I didn't find success in Torah learning, al ta'amin, do not believe him. If a person says, Yogati, I worked, umatzati, and I was successful, ta'amin. If a person says, lo yogati, I did not work, and I was successful, al ta'amin. So most people understand this to mean that if a person says, I worked, and I still don't understand the Torah, we don't believe him because Hashem will certainly give him the understanding. That's the standard explanation. But listen to what the Kutzker Rebbe says. The Kutzker Rebbe says, maybe Chazal don't mean you will understand. But maybe the meaning of Chazal said, if a person says, I worked and I didn't find Torah, he's not telling the truth because the work itself creates the relationship with Hashem, even if you don't understand anything. He says, the Yegiya itself is the Metziah, is the gift. Meaning to say, a person tries to learn Torah, a person tries to do mitzvahs. Even if they're not successful, Chazal are not promising you will be successful. They are telling you that is your success. The success is the effort itself that was put into Avaida. The success is the effort. So Bekitzer, we see so many, this is explaining why the symbolism of menorah is greater than korbanos. Because the messages reverberate. The menorah, the flame of the menorah as remez to Torah, the flame of the menorah as a remez to a neshama, the miksha, the wholeness of the menorah as a remez of the importance of consistency, and the kasis of the Shem and Zayas as a remez to the importance of work and the fact that it's not our job to be successful. It is our job to try, and if we try, we are successful. It's not that if you try, you will be a success. That's not, the Kutzker Rebbe says, that's not what it means. But rather, if you try, you are a success. That is the very definition. And of course, if that's a message we could give our children, that would also be an extremely important message. But once again, consistency means we have to also believe it. We can't really, what do they say? The salesman credo is, you can't sell a product that you don't buy, that you wouldn't buy, right? So you have to buy the product, and then you're able to be an effective salesman for it. So Be'ezer Hashem, so once again, all of this is nichlal. I just want to point out, again, I didn't have a chance to finish this haftarah, because it's a beautiful haftarah, but all of this is nichlal in the great vision of the menorah. That the menorah, once again, remember in the haftarah, is the menorah at the very beginning of the Bayis Sheni, the return from the Babylonian exile, shortly before the death of the last prophets and the end of Nevuah, when people are despondent, they feel hopeless, they feel they have no courage to go on. And the menorah is that great remez of hope. That is actually why, the truth of the matter is, although the state of Israel was obviously not a totally religious state, but that is why the seven-branched menorah was chosen as the symbol of the state of Israel. It was actually based, Ben-Gurion, among other things, knew his Tanakh, and it was based on Perek Gimel of Zechariah, in which the seven-branched menorah was a remez that the Jewish people will persevere not by their strength and not by their military might, but through the light of Hashem that comes into the world. And that is the historical reason why this menorah was chosen as the symbol of the state of Israel. And Be'ezer Hashem, we should all feel that way in our own lives. So that's a good thing.